It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. With the state sitting on an unprecedented surplus, what funding priorities would give farm operations the biggest boost? A coalition of state ag groups pondered that question. They're out with their top biennial budget priorities. Governor Tony Evers delivers his biennial budget address next Wednesday. Call in about the biggest issues facing farmers and how state government funding could assist. 800-642-1234. Jason Muniaini is Executive Director of Governmental Relations for the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. Jason, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. And Kevin Krentz is here as well. The Farm Bureau's president owns a dairy farm in Berlin in Washara County. Kevin, welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning as well.
So, Kevin, you laid out priorities in recent days with about 20 ag-related groups. How much does the state budget affect, Wisconsin family farms?
Well, Wisconsin agriculture is a $104 billion business in Wisconsin, and most of that is spent locally in all of our local communities. A number of years ago, I went through my impact of my farm and found out that 62% of my expenses are spent within a 15-mile radius of my farm. That's a huge impact for local communities across Wisconsin. We feel from, as Wisconsin Farm Bureau and many of these ag groups that joined us in laying out these priorities, it's extremely important for us to get out early and really lay out what we need for agriculture to support agriculture and to support our farmers over this biennium in this budget.
Jason, tell us about what you're trying to get through. What are these key priorities?
So we've got an aggressive list, and we're looking to build on the success from the 21-23 budget, where we had some great opportunities to help with farmer-led conservation, sustainability efforts, workforce development. But we really want to start to focus in on some of our rural economic development initiatives, ensuring that we kind of protect agriculture from market shifts and disruptions as we've seen over the last few years, but also, look towards, developing and supporting our farmers and really reducing regulatory burdens to farming, while also building on some of the critical transportation improvements that we had in the last session, build upon that to make sure that agriculture can bring its products from the farm to the grocery store.
And, prior to your position with the State Farm Bureau, you were the chief of staff for State Senator Rob Coles. How has that experience in the legislature connected you with what you do now?
Well, it's fun. And, a relatively regular guest on your show, Senator Coles. We got to really work a lot with agricultural producers who are in our area, so Brown, Shawano, Wapaka, and Outagamie counties. So that opportunity allowed me to really get to know agriculture policy from within the Capitol side. But now I'm really looking towards being with Farm Bureau and getting to know a lot more of the producers on a first-name basis and get around to kind of see what the practices that are happening on the farm and how those kind of relate to policy and bring that experience to the Capitol to make sure that our legislators know the types of things that farmers are going to need over the next two-year period to be successful.
We're talking about the biennial budget priorities being shared by state agricultural groups. We have Jason Muniaini there, Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation Governmental Affairs. Kevin Krentz, president of the Farm Bureau Federation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Kevin, last September, our show talked about the biennial budget set by the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and we had Secretary Randy Romanski, who talked about the importance of long-term investments in agriculture.
Big, medium, and small farms are operating here, and we need them all to be successful. We need to give them the tools, not just one time, or not just two times in a two-year biennium, but we need to make these investments long-term.
So really thinking about the long term for various programs and grants, which state ag programs should receive continued funding in the next biennial budget?
Yeah, there's a number of them that, like Secretary Romanski said, that this is a continuation of what we need to continue to accomplish to protect our natural resources moving forward. Farmers are very innovative, but they can't predict the weather. We have major events that come through and remove some of the nutrients from our farms. And we need to continue to find innovative ways to protect those natural resources, to keep them in place throughout the year. And a number of these programs, the producer-led watershed grant program, is one of those key aspects that I just talked about. It creates a way for farmers to be innovative. It also creates some ways to work with the UW system in order to do some of that research and make those connections, not only the research on those farms, but also to communicate with other farmers across the state. The cover crop insurance program. Cover crops can be very different from the south part of the state to the northern part of the state. We have a very different freeze point from Kenosha County up to Ashland County. And planting those cover crops late in the year, we need innovative ways to try to get cover crops on and continue to have green and growing areas for our crops moving forward. So just a small rebate in order to continue to support that need for protecting that natural resource and protecting those nutrients. Just and then the nitrogen optimization grant as well.
I just want to return for just a moment on the producer-led watershed grant program. Continued funding of $1 million is being requested here. Are there quantifiable improvements in Wisconsin's soil health and water quality that are attributed to this program that would help sell it, that would make the case for the continuation of this grant program?
Yeah, some of those are very area specific and some aren't. Some can happen across the state. And that's where the innovation is important. That's where some of the flexibility in this is important, because what works on one farm or one area of the state doesn't always work across the state. So that's why it's extremely important to have all of that involved in that.
Let's take a call now. Jim is joining us from River Falls. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I got money for a watershed improvement, and I think it makes a huge difference. It can be very helpful. But my original point for calling you is I'm concerned about the consolidation of ag and Wall Street firms and buying up small farms. And, you know, we're seeing a diminution of family farms and local agriculture. And I think whatever government can do to help, you know, local agriculture and get, you know, good food on the table in our local cities and you know, across the state, and having coordination between, you know, local farmers and the markets in their areas is a great thing too, because like many things in our economy, these huge Wall Street firms are eliminating family farms and smaller businesses.
Jim, thank you for that. Jason, what in your agenda targets the concerns here that Jim is expressing about big agriculture and the demise of small family farms?
Sure. And Jim, thanks for your question. I think one of the things that we want to make sure that we're doing is making sure that we're supporting our agricultural producers and our farmers with the right types of things so that their farms are, you know, solvent, that they can remain feasible. One of the things that I'm looking forward to talking a little bit more about is the Wisconsin Commodity Food Bank food purchasing program, which was included in our Ag Coalition budget priorities. That program was created and administered at DATCAP using ARPA funds, but in our request, we're going to be asking that the state biennial budget actually provide general purpose revenue to actually fund that program, because what we found is with its success was that we were able to kind of, you know, weather the storm of the pandemic by providing a secondary source for some of our food products to be able to be used within food banks. And by partnering with Feeding Wisconsin's network of food banks, we were able to find secondary alternative sources for food products and to go to. So along with that, I mean, also making sure that we have a workforce that agriculture can tap into, that we can develop that rural workforce, and that we can develop, you know, rural housing and make sure that rural commodities are rural communities are places that people want to go. One of those is going to be one of those big things that people look for is broadband expansion. And as we see from the federal level, over the next few years, we're going to see between $750 to $1.1 billion in additional grants coming for broadband expansion. So as some people are transitioning towards remote work, maybe want to come home, be closer to family, and uphold those rural communities, we can actually utilize those grants to not only improve those rural communities, but also to make sure that our agriculture producers and farmers have the necessary infrastructure, the necessary ability to communicate with the rest of the world, so that we can get our products to market more efficiently. And by keeping our farms solvent, that's the best way to make sure that, you know, we don't consolidate into additional large producers. But it's definitely something that we're keeping an eye on.
Jason Muniaini heads up governmental and policy initiatives for the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. We have their president, Kevin Krentz, with us. Colin, about funding for Wisconsin agriculture, what you want to have included in the new state budget that would help rural communities, help family farms, 800-642-1234. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin Ag is a huge economic driver to our state's economy each year, making a roughly $105 billion impact. That's a stat lauded by our state's Agriculture Department. A coalition of ag groups have come up with their priorities for what they want included in the upcoming biennial budget. Call in with your thoughts, your ideas, 800-642-1234. We have Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation President Kevin Krentz is here, along with the group's Governmental Relations Director Jason Muniaini. Kevin, the Farm Bureau supports a new grant program that would fund improvements for agricultural roads. And I want to take a moment here to talk a little bit about the roads that farmers are encountering. What do you see going on here?
Well, we're in rural Wisconsin, we are all experiencing roads that continue to deteriorate, and we need a funding mechanism to help those road projects. Agriculture is a huge impact on Wisconsin's economy, and that's why we felt it was extremely important to really start laying out some critical agricultural road improvement programs in order to really get those products to market. Like we talked about earlier, agriculture supports local communities. So those dollars coming back to those farms are extremely important for local communities. So having roads to support to move those products to market is extremely important.
There are, as you know, spring road bans, some, you know, spring thaw weight restrictions in some counties to protect roads. And the dairy industry has been called out before for deteriorating road conditions. How should milk haulers and the dairy industry address this issue with state and local government?
Again, it's a huge impact for local communities to have farms there. And we need to continue to find ways to better those roads in order to take their products to market, whether that be potatoes or whether that be dairy products.
Jason, so this agricultural road improvement grant would be awarded to towns and counties by mm-hmm. importance. Which road systems in Wisconsin would benefit most from a grant?
Well, one of the things that I think that we're looking to do in designing this program is find the agricultural use routes that are, you know, really in the most disrepair, but also have some of the largest impacts to our local economies. Utilizing DOT's own data to do that, and put the burden on some of these local municipalities to say, hey, we've got a road right here that really, you know, is an important road for some of our larger producers in the area. And we need to make sure that we do a full replacement of those roads. I mean, it's we've seen a lot of circumstances in the past where we've put money into you know, town and county roads, and they've done chip sealing or they've, you know, done some modifications to improve that in the now. But some of these, like you said, with spring weight restrictions and things like that, some of these roads just aren't up to snuff to see the type of use that they've actually, you know, anticipated. And what we really want to focus on is making sure that we're improving those routes that are being used most frequently and building those to a standard that is commensurate with what their anticipated use is. And you mentioned this earlier with such a large state surplus. We look at this as an opportunity to do some one-time funding on the most critical of routes to look at that and make sure that those roads that need the most repair and the most immediate need are taken care of as quickly as possible.
So what I'm hearing is, you know, they're moving a valuable commodity with a lot of different critical supply chains involved, with paydays involved. If their trucks are moving across roads that are crumbling, that is certainly can be a risk to ensuring that overall supply chain and that marketplace runs smoothly.
Sure, and then, you know, we get into a problem as we've all seen with the price of gasoline, having to go and run a patchwork of different roads that are you know, built to better standards adds cost, and that you'll see that cost when you're buying products at the grocery store, and those types of things are you know, it's all attached to each other. So making sure that we have routes that are efficient and safe and built to a necessary standard to deal with the anticipated use of those roads is really what this program is targeting.
Something that hasn't come up really yet is the Farmland Preservation Program that was established in 1978 and provides these tax credits to farmers. And, you know, state ag groups are saying the program needs an overhaul. It needs simplification and modernization in the next budget. What should be changed, Kevin?
Well, simply it needs to be simplified and modernized to support modern agriculture. And through tax credits and just the standards that were built in the 21 draft of the Senate bill that came through.
So, Jason, you know, is there a greater incentive now? Because one of this is keeping farm land in production in order to earn a tax credit. Is there a lot more incentive now to take land out of production and sell to developers?
I mean, you see that happening, and, you know, farmers are entitled to do with their farmland what they want. But one of the things that we really want to make sure that we're doing is providing a regulatory structure so that farms can be productive and stay solvent into the future. And that's, you know, one of the anticipated, you know, that's the goal of that program. Whether that's, you know, insulating ourselves from market disruptions or making sure that we are, you know, not over leveraging ourselves in terms of, you know, how farms are operating. There's a lot that can be done on that, but, you know, this program is focused on making sure that we really keep farms in production and solvent into the future.
And to you, that's what modernization really involves. That's what it entails.
Yeah. I mean, these are, you know, if you get an opportunity to be on a farm, these are modern operations. These are businesses that are you know, updating their technology constantly and are using, you know, state-of-the-art things to be able to, you know, keep themselves producing and cost-effective.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kevin Krentz is president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation with a dairy farm in Berlin, and Jason Muniaini is the Farm Bureau's executive director of governmental relations. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. With the new legislative session underway, we explore the policy agenda of the Wisconsin Nurses Association, which states its mission is to represent the interests of the state's 90,000 registered nurses. Join the conversation about the nursing workforce as it is in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Gina Denick-Champion is executive director of the Wisconsin Nurses Association, and she's been an RN for more than 40 years. Gina, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate, and good morning.
Good morning. How are nurses in Wisconsin doing after 3 years of the pandemic? What are you hearing?
The practice environment is still pretty tough. There's not enough nurses, and we're also seeing a lot of individuals with chronic conditions that have been kind of left untreated that are now needing really intensive acute care. Some are in there with COVID, others are in there with the influenza, although that seems to be going away, the downside, but there's still a lot of folks needing acute care. Our primary care settings, sort of the same scenario, more folks needing care than there are providers. So it still remains a pretty, I would say, tense environment for nurses.
How is the mental health of nurses? What do you see there?
We know that their well-being could certainly use some fortification, so to speak. They are tired. They are burned out. They are doing what they can to continue to provide the care that they can. But we really, in WNA, we're trying to do our best to help provide where they can find some resources to think about, you know, what is this thing called burnout, or how can I take better care of myself during this time?
How does the association address work-life balance and burnout? What efforts are you making to address these issues?
Well, from a higher perspective, you know, higher sort of, and then I'll get to the detail, but we have pulled together 16 nursing associations in Wisconsin. So those range from faculty to nurse executives to those nurses with the boots on the ground, so to speak, that are in the emergency rooms, in the surgical centers, those sorts of associations that represent that specialty. And we've identified five priorities that we are trying to work on and develop some clearer messages coming from all of us about what we can be doing to help address the nursing shortage. And one of those is looking at the well-being of nurses. And that, as that continues to be discussed, there are lots of resources that between WNA and the American Nurses Association have in place where they can go, as well as, you know, really asking that the workplace environment, some are doing a fabulous job of really trying to, you know, take care of the well-being and really trying to help these nurses. So we have our EAP programs that are available, but there's still there, and still feeling the challenge.
Those employee assistance programs. One of the priorities on your list is the APRN Modernization Act. This law that you would like to propose here, in part, allows nurse practitioners to prescribe medication and refer patients without a documented collaboration with a physician. Why is passing this piece of legislation so important to your association?
So we believe that advanced practice registered nurses who are nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, nurse anesthetists, and nurse midwives can practice in the areas where there really isn't a lot of other healthcare providers. And we have nurses that have opened their own independent practice, not independent, particularly all the way we would like to see as other 26 other states, be able to practice. Right now, they need to pay a physician to be a collaborator. And number one, a lot of physicians in other health systems are not allowed to be a paid collaborator because of the conflict of interest. And then there are others where, you know, the nurse isn't necessarily needing that physician that they're paying to be their collaborator when what you find advanced practice nurses doing is providing that calling or contacting that provider that can do the best and meet the needs. So if I know my patient, for example, you know, I've identified some heart problems that are kind of beyond my scope, I'm going to call the cardiologist. I'm not going to call my collaborating physician. If my patient is having some significant respiratory concerns, they're going to call the pulmonologist. They're going to call the surgeon. And with that, you know, having to pay for, you know, this other provider really doesn't necessarily support getting these nurses into these communities where there's a lot of health disparities and other areas where they can provide that care and do it a little more cost effective.
I mean, you just gave examples there of collaboration, and all healthcare professionals collaborate. That's part of medicine. It needs to be part of medicine. I mean, why is a legislated collaborative agreement a barrier in the advanced practice nursing profession?
So there's no other profession that's required to do that. And it's a one-way collaboration. So it's the nurse, the advanced practice nurse, that needs to find the physician to be the collaborator. And the collaborator, the physician, is not required to collaborate with this advanced practice nurse, which can leave that nurse, you know, out there without, you know, being able to do what they want to do. And sometimes they can be the only provider in that area of the state, particularly in when you think about mental health care here in this state. So there is that piece. And as I said, 26 other states are doing this, and they're getting into those settings and, you know, places where there's not enough providers in these states, physicians, for example, because of the shortage, where they are not able to be able to take care of those other populations. So
you're saying like a physician might not be in the specific area that a nurse practitioner wishes to set up a clinic in order to have that collaboration, yeah. That clinic might not exist.
Correct. Okay. And we find with some of these nurses, they could be a day away from having to close their practice. Hmm. And you think about the mental health side of it. If you are the only practitioner in that area of the state, where are they going to refer their patients if they have to close?
Gina Denick-Champion, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Nurses Association, as we look at top priorities of their group, you can join in on the nursing workforce, what you encounter, what a loved one is encountering as a nurse. 800-642-1234. Gina, Governor Tony Evers vetoed a similar bill last spring, stating that it does not address concerns of physicians. What has changed that will make this APRN Modernization Act more likely to become law?
Well, we're pretty optimistic this session. We have sat down, or we are sitting and talking with our representatives from the Wisconsin Medical Society, and really trying to, you know, come to agreement on language and concepts that we can both support. And I have to say those meetings, you know, are much more productive than what they've been in the past.
Why is that?
I think I think it's because both sides really see the need for getting more care in the state and improving access. And I find those overtures to be supportive and realistic, and that it's in the best interest of the patient. So we are very optimistic for this session.
Governor Evers, in the veto letter, though, had called out significant differences in required education, training, and experience between physicians and APRNs. Is that an issue here, having functionally equivalent practices to a physician?
We have met with the governor's office, and to provide more information about the practice of advanced practice nurses, and really did our best to show that they're delivering safe care, they're delivering it in parts of the state where there are no other healthcare providers, and that we have 50 years plus of research and outcomes to show the benefits of these advanced practice nurses. So I think the governor understands that. I personally haven't asked him about it recently, but I think he has a better understanding and clarity around what it is we do.
Gina Danek-Champion leads the Wisconsin Nurses Association, the group lobbying on behalf of RNs. Colin, about how you view this workforce, your priorities as a nurse or watching a loved one work in this profession, 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the health policy agenda of the Wisconsin Nurses Association. Join in on what legislation you support to help deliver care to patients, priorities you have for this essential healthcare workforce. Your message to lawmakers on nurses, 800-642-1234. Wisconsin Nurses Association Executive Director Gina Denick-Champion is with us. Let's bring on a call now, Patrick in Viroqua. Hi, Patrick.
Yes, good morning. If the legislation passes, the nurses will have more responsibility. Will there be a pay raise along with that extra responsibility?
Patrick, thanks. Gina.
So right now we see the majority of our nurse practitioners and our clinical nurse specialists are all employees of our health systems. And some may will choose to venture out on their own, and whether they want to become, you know, bill Medicare for those services or Medicaid for those services. I think we see the salaries of these individuals in our health system being what they are. And I don't anticipate that this would change in any way. The health provider or the health systems themselves can continue to require these advanced practice nurses to have a collaborating physician. So even though the legislation will say, you know, you'll be able, you can be, now you can be an independent provider. I don't see, you know, similar to the number, what about 86% of our physicians are employees of health systems. I would say the salaries are set the way they are. They continue to, you know, get bonuses for better, you know, performance outcomes that are critical metrics in demonstrating safe patient care. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Patrick. The association is requesting $10 million in the next state budget to continue a tuition forgiveness program for nursing faculty. Why focus the efforts on tuition reimbursement to address a nursing faculty shortage?
You know, it is, we are really close to a, you know, a crisis if we're not already in it. The demand for nurses is huge, and we can't, you know, we can't produce more nurses if we don't have the nurse faculty available to do so. The nurse educator role does not, you know, the salaries really aren't that, you know, are, if I'm a nurse and I can work elsewhere doing another, you know, job as an advanced practice nurse, I mean, that's often the deterrent to not wanting to become a nurse educator or nurse faculty member. So this legislation, we received $5 million last year, and it is just about all spent, which to me shows huge, you know, the commitment from these nurses to want to be able to teach. And so the loan forgiveness, or, you know, working as a fellow and getting those dollars to help support their educational journey while they're in school and help supplement their income, we are finding that this seems to be a great recruitment and retention strategy.
Don't nurses already qualify, though, for student loan relief under the Biden administration, under the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program?
They do. And those dollars are, you know, we think about the number of nurses that are looking, and those are registered nurses, not necessarily those going into nurse education. But we need as much support as possible to build our workforce, our faculty workforce, or we're not going to be able to meet the demands of what our populations in Wisconsin are going to need in the very near future. As we see the number of elderly, the numbers in Wisconsin growing, so will the need for nurses at the bedside, as well as nurses in our, you know, in our community centers, are in the home, in our primary care clinics or our specialty clinics. So that's what we have to try and be able to make sure that we have the numbers of nurses available to meet that demand for the future.
Gina Denick-Champion, the executive director of the Wisconsin Nurses Association, join in at 800-642-1234. Danielle in Milwaukee is here. Danielle, hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Danielle.
Registered. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I'm an RN in the Milwaukee area. I have been for 5 years. Up until a month ago, I was a critical care nurse. I'm really grateful that you had this conversation going. One of the things that I think is really important and something that absolutely has to be addressed is the mental health and wellness support for nurses. What exists is not adequate. I went to therapy, intensive trauma healing therapy, for a whole year, twice a week at $150 a session. And that was the only way I was able to cope with being a critical care nurse and the stress of having someone's life in your hands and the pandemic and watching, you know, our healthcare system truly start to crumble. And suggesting that an EAP program can help with this is great. However, A, it's biased because it goes through your employer, and so you're not comfortable even if you know it's a safe place. And B, 8 sessions is typically what's covered, and I went to therapy for a year twice a week. So that's my comment.
Danielle, thank you so much for sharing such a personal story here. Gina, you know, what do you hear there in terms of the trauma and healing that Danielle brought up as a critical care nurse and the complications of going through an employer for mental health support?
First of all, I just want to say thank you, Danielle, for number one, wanting to take care of yourself. That's huge. That's huge. A lot of nurses will just leave the bedside. And so I applaud your efforts. And I know that it was a financial sacrifice, which is something that needs to be addressed. Also, critical care is, it couldn't get any harder, I would say, in terms of the number of patients that you were seeing, and some not, getting through their hospitalization because of the illnesses, and that really can take a toll on nurses. As we are looking at the, our priorities with the other 16 nurses associations, we know that that's what is needed, and I know EAP feels really awkward, and because of the close tie with the employer, and that's the sort of, we know, resources that our nurses need, and that is what we're trying to figure out. How do we get this care delivered, and how can we do it without breaking the bank of the nurse?
Gina, thank you for joining us. Gina Denick-Champion has been a registered nurse for over 40 years, executive director of the Wisconsin Nurses Association. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.